Hour number two of Overtime here on The Fan with Toby Altizer, taking you up until 3 o'clock when we'll turn it over to a Washington legend, the DOC, Doc Walker, taking you up until Nationals baseball this evening on The Fan. 800-636-1067 is the phone number if you'd like to chime in. We're talking about Commanders training camp, and all of our training camp coverage is brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. We'll get into a little Nationals talk in just a bit, but let's get out to the phones. Let's start with Nick in Welcome. Nick, what's going on?
I wonder who's producing the show today. I love the music in between. I'm a little worried about Jaden. During the season, when he dropped back in first season, the four games he played, he'd get happy feet, move his feet, move his body, move his feet. And a lot of times I've seen, being at the games, you see the receivers open, then you see him not be open, and him not making the throw right when it was supposed to. And it's just something, I mean, he's a great quarterback, but I've seen him hesitate before, and I've seen him, you know, I think that Bates would have had a lot more receptions. I think number 11, I can always forget his name, would have had more.
McCaffrey.
Yeah. It's almost like he looked him off. Like he didn't want to throw it to him, or maybe he missed the window. But I'm worried about him coming out to snap, you know, dropping back, you know, 1-2-3, set up, throw. 1-2-3, set up, throw. And I don't know if it's something he's ever done before. You know, I don't know what his past history is completely.
All right, man. Appreciate it, Nick. Yeah, I think the interesting part there is, you know, when you look at this offense, I think they're going to work more on that rhythm and timing. And they're going to try to find a way to get him into a rhythm where he's throwing the football like you're talking about, hit your back foot, get the ball out. So I think they're going to try to do some of those things. Haven't necessarily had that rhythm the first couple of days at training camp, but I think that's kind of the basis of what this offense is going to be. There's going to be some, you know, deep drops. There's going to be some play action, and I think they want to get to that. But, you know, I think at its best, if they're going to do a drop back pass game like that, it's going to be getting the ball out on time and in rhythm. And I think Jaden, with his ball placement and his ability to get through his reads, I think if they can get that rhythm and timing down and understand what they're trying to do and get on the same page there, I think you could see him really excel in that style of a scheme, on top of the fact that he can make stuff happen when the play isn't there. And I think that's what's going to make him special, but you need him to be able to play on time and on schedule early on throughout the game, so that way when it comes time for him to play Superman, like, he's able to. It's not that he's done that all game long. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Let's get out to Hayden in South Carolina. Hayden, what's going on?
What's going on, Toby? I'm pretty torn when it comes to these two schemes, man. I'm pretty optimistic on the offensive side of the ball. You know, I think that a new scheme, a new look for this offense might be exactly what we need to unlock some of these younger pieces. You know, Jaden Daniels in his third year, Luke McCaffrey, Antonio Williams, these younger guys in our wide receiver room, even a Bill in the backfield. I'm pretty optimistic about a new look for those guys. But on the defensive side, man, I think in the NFL, a scheme can only get you so far. I think the good defenses rely on stars and leaders, you know, guys like a London Fletcher or a Ryan Kerrigan, or even what Frankie Louvu has shown us flashes of in the last couple of years. And we can be optimistic about a guy like Sonny Styles, but he hasn't played a single down in the NFL yet, man. And I think if we're being honest, we just don't have those guys on our defense, and I'm a little worried about that.
No, I appreciate it, Hayden. I think that's an interesting point. When you look at the defensive side, I do think that they can do a little bit more in scheme than maybe you're giving them credit for, but I do understand your point that, you know, the best defenses have guys that are like a Myles Garrett, or you have a Micah Parsons, or take your pick of an edge rusher that's a star. You have a Christian Gonzalez on the outside, or you have something that is someone that you can really rely on, and maybe you don't feel that the Commanders have that guy, and I understand that. You know, they went out and spent a lot of money on Adafe Owe. I don't know if he's of that caliber of the guys that I mentioned, obviously. He's not Myles Garrett. He's not Micah Parsons. But can he still be a big-time game wrecker. I do think there is something to be said, though, that the way that they're going to play defense this season is going to give guys opportunities to shine through a little bit more. I think they're going to get one-on-one opportunities off the edge as rushers, and I would hope that a guy that's going to get $100 million in Adafe Owe can win a one-on-one more often than not against a tackle, whether it's a great tackle or not. Can you win the one-on-ones there? Can I get Chaisson one-on-one? Can I get Frankie Louvu coming downhill against an interior offensive lineman one-on-one or trying to sneak through a gap? Can I even get some guys free because of miscommunications up front? So I think there is a little bit more that they can get with the scheme, but I certainly understand the point there. To the offensive side, you know, the thing that's interesting is I think there's so much of an offense when you're learning the new scheme. So much of what they want to do is built on rhythm and timing, and really the only way to get rhythm and timing is time on task. Like, you've got to get out there, run the plays, get the reps in, and they just haven't had those yet. And I do think that's probably a part of the reason why you've seen 2 of the 3 days. I think the offense is better today, but I think 2 of the 3 days have been more so of a defense-dominated practice. And I'm hoping that as time goes on, you can maybe find the stuff that the offense is good at and start making that sort of the focus of the offense. But also, just finding more of what works and finding that time and that rhythm of where I'm looking, where I need to be, what my landmark is, where I need to get to against this specific coverage. Because, I mean, that's the thing sometimes. I'd encourage you, if you know are really into football and love some of the in-depth stuff, Julian Edelman has done some great stuff where he put out deep dive, like 50-minute YouTube video of him breaking down what it's like going through an NFL playbook and learning different things. And to hear how in-depth it gets of, yeah, if we see this coverage, then we're going to break this route off here and we're going to do this. And but if the safety's playing it this certain way, we're going to do this. And but if we, like, just so many different variations, so that you can understand why it takes time to build this chemistry. But also, I think that's where it comes special to have some continuity. I think, you know, at worst for Jaden Daniels, if they get into the season and they're still going through some things, you can always look at 17 and just figure it out, right? Like, you can always just say, all right, well, let's do this. Let's get into this sort of a thing. Let's get the ball to Terry here. But I think they're going to figure some stuff out. So, honestly, if I had to choose a side that I'm a little more optimistic, and maybe this is just prisoner of the moment, but I actually really like what I've seen from the defensive scheme and tend to believe that they're going to be much better. I don't know that you could even say that they're going to be good, because last year, even if they're much better from last year, they could still be a bottom half defense and that would be an improvement. But I do think that you're going to see some things out of the defense that you're going to like this season. 800-636-1067. Let's get out to Vic and Akakik. Vic, what's going on?
Toby, what's good?
What's all, man?
I'm all right. So I'm definitely impressed with the defense. I expected the defense to be at this pace and to be at this quality at this time. Devontae Jones is an excellent addition to our organization. We have athletes on the defensive side of the ball. We have physical, fast players. Several of them have been in the NFL for some time. That defense is one, it's fundamentally sound. He's going to make sure that is the heartbeat of that defense. It's efficient and it's physical. The when you add that part to how he allows them to play and how he schemes it up, I know a lot of people talk about scheme, but scheme does not work without fundamental sound football, because then it looks like helter-skelter everywhere when offenses find out where you're weak at. The great thing about that is he can plug people anywhere as they are fundamentally sound, as they are fast, as they are athletic, as they are disciplined. He can plug people anywhere in any coverage, in any front, because everyone knows their job and they know the job or the technique and the responsibility of the defense in multiple areas. And with that being said, I expected the defense to get some wins in the first 3 days of camp. I just did. And the reason also, because on the offense, this is the West Coast offense. We got, like, people that don't know football, they may be enamored or confused by it, but this is the Bill Walsh West Coast offense. Three steps, let it go. Five steps, let it go. Not three, two steps and a hop. Not four steps and a hop. It is a timing offense. It is in breaking. It is areas. It is spots. It is targets based on what the defense is giving you, and that's why he gives them three plays. That's the same thing Bill Walsh did to Joe Montana. He gave Joe two plays. Then he eventually got it to three, and that's how they grew the script, because the script allowed him to take three plays from the script. Then they got the script in different situations, second and six, first and ten, fourth and three. When that timing gets on par, I am very excited about what the offense will be, because the defense, the quality defense they're going against every day. And that type of defense versus that offense that it comes down to timing can breed excellence on your football team. So, yes, yeah. I feel good about the defense, but I'm excited about, as you said today, the offense was better today. Can you imagine with how that defense plugs and plays, being fast and physical and fundamentally sound, and then when Jaden and the offense get their timing to where it's efficient, it's physical, it's intense, it starts to pour on. Can you imagine what our offense would look like versus bad defenses, versus okay defenses, versus defenses that have weaknesses that are glaring? Can you imagine that? So that's all I'm feeling good about where we are so far.
No, I appreciate the phone call, Vic. Always bring great energy. And I think that's a good point, too. Honestly, it's a unique style of defense that Washington's going to run. There's not many teams that run this specific style where it's so aggressive. Minnesota's really the only one that plays this style. And, you know, there's going to be some wrinkles. This isn't fully Brian Flores' defense. I think Durante Jones is going to have his own twist on it. But from what I've seen, it looks very similar to Minnesota in a lot of ways. But if you think back to last season, the defense that Washington had no answer for was Minnesota's. And so they'll be ready to go for any type of blitzing scheme, because that's what Minnesota's defense does. Guys are coming from everywhere. Like the number one thing you're doing when you're preparing for Minnesota is, let me get that protection plan in as soon as possible, and let's study that extra hard this week, because I got to be able to protect against this team. And for going up against them every day in practice, I think that is something that's going to help out the offense. And another thing, too, I think with this offensive scheme that I'm excited to see is, to me, football is so pretty when there is a perfect pass play or a perfect run play executed. But I love watching when the timing and the rhythm of an offense is just working in sync. And the ball's out on time, it's thrown to the correct guy, it's thrown in the correct window, it's thrown at the correct time, hits the guy in the hands, doesn't even always have to result in run after catch, but just the ability to understand of, all right, so I've got this guy that's pulling this defender, so now I can throw it into this window. And I think working that intermediate part of the field is going to be a lot of fun to watch this season. There was a play today in 7-on-7 where one of Jaden's best throws of training camp so far, where he hit Van Jefferson on an in cut, probably about 15 yards down the field. And you just watched him read it out in real time. As soon as the DB that was sitting a little bit deeper came to the tight end that was coming underneath, there you go. Here's the receiver back behind him and hits him right in stride. That's beautiful. And I think once they start to get more of that rhythm and timing, and Jaden especially, someone that relies, like I said, being in a rhythm, being in working off of those reps and banking those reps, I think the more you see Jaden get comfortable in this thing, I think fans are going to really, really love it. I do think there is something to be said, though, that at the wide receiver position, you also have to have the guys that can execute what you're drawing up. And I think there is still some questions about who's going to step up as that second guy as the pass catcher behind Terry McLaurin. I think Chigakonkwo is the obvious one in terms of who's going to catch the football and give you a lot. And maybe it's not as dire a need if you think that he's going to have a spectacular season, which I do tend to believe. I was on with B-Mitch last week, and he threw out the idea of him going for 70, 80 catches and going for around 800 yards. If he does that, then yeah, the number two receiver probably isn't as dire, because you figure Terry goes for, let's just say he goes for 1,100. Then you get 800 from Chig. That's 1,900 yards. And so realistically, You know, Jaden Daniels in his rookie season threw for, I believe, around 3,500. So that's 1,600 more receiving yards. You give a couple hundred to Rashad White. You split the rest among four different receivers who find their specific role where they're good at, whether it's one guy's down the field or Jalen Lane underneath or Treylon Burks as the contested catch and another outside guy, whatever it is, right? You find that other the other roles, and all of a sudden you're fine where you're at. But I think that is something to be said, that there have been some times, and going back to what Nikki had tweeted, there have been some times when you're like, well, just from what I've seen throughout my time watching this team and, you know, being at a lot of training camp practices watching Jaden, generally his process is pretty good. He gets through his reads. One call earlier said he didn't always trust it and turn the ball free. That can be true at times, and I think that's still something where he's learning a scheme or getting comfortable. But generally in practice, Jaden gets the right read and is accurate with the football. Like, that is something that he's been so impressive, and it's night and day watching him versus any other quarterback. And it's still that way, by the way. But it's night and day watching him versus any other quarterback out there, including a former number two pick in Mariota. So he's so impressive when he does that. I don't think that he all of a sudden isn't able to get reads or whatever it is. I tend to think that maybe sometimes he's getting through them and that guy's not open, that guy's not open, and all right, finally. Like, even when he's been at his best at times, it's been getting through the reads quickly because they're not there and getting the ball to the check down, which is going to be a big part of the offense as well. You got to be able to keep the chains moving. But I think there is something to be said that maybe that second receiving option isn't currently on this team, and maybe they do need to go get a Stephon Diggs. 800-636-1067. We continue talking about the Commanders training camp. Want to get into the Nationals as well. If you'd like to chime in again, 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer with you till 3 o'clock here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 3 o'clock. Then we'll turn it over to the DOC, Doc Walker. 800-636-1067. If you'd like to chime in as we talk about Commanders training camp, and our training camp coverage is brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Let's get out back out to the phone lines. Mitch is in Jersey. Mitch, what's going on?
How you doing, Toby?
Doing great, Mitch.
I think our best part, I hope everything's well, the best part with Washington right now is in the running game. I like Rashad Moore. I think he'd be a bruiser. I think in Pac-12, Tampa, he had share dues, but I think he'd be leading the team in rushing. And with the Nets, they really got some lineup. I hate to see him go. And it's all about trading, getting someone for the short stuff. They don't want to pay Aprons. Aprons, James Wood, Garcia. I don't know if he came from the minors. Cruz is heating up there. As long as Lyle is coming, you got some hidden lineup. I hope we don't do the same thing like we did just before they won the World Series when they let go Hopper and Trey Turner, Rendon. Well, that was that's a story for another day. But that is some hidden team we have. I think we can make the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens at this deadline and what they decide to do. Appreciate the phone call. Again, 800-636-1067 is the number to call. Yeah, I think he mentioned the running back room there. I'm curious to see how they split that room up and how they divvy up the carries. I kind of already mentioned that. Another room that I'm interested to see how they divvy things up is the linebacker position. When you figure they're probably going to run two linebackers out there most of the time, two true off-the-ball linebackers, they might run a 3-4, a 4-3, whatever, and I guess maybe in that sense, Chaisson or Owe, whatever would be considered a linebacker, even though they're just an edge rusher. If they're just running the two off-ball linebackers, Sonny Styles, Frankie Louvu, Leo Chanel, how do you work that rotation? How do you fix those three guys into those two spots, and how do you vary them? And Grant and I talked about this a little bit the last couple of days, the green dot conversation. I don't necessarily care who calls the defensive signals. I really don't. I don't think it makes that big of a difference. I think Sonny Styles can handle it if they need him to. I mean, the way that I've heard people talk about Sonny Styles and the way just, even watching some of the practices, the way that he goes about his business, it's very businesslike, very Jaden Daniels-esque, just in the defensive side, right? So if they need to throw everything at him and say, just figure it out, kid, and just throw him in the deep end of the pool, I don't think he's someone that like just sinks. I think he'll find a way to make it work. Plus, he's coming from Ohio State, where there's ridiculous expectations year in, year out. And he was one of the guys tasked with getting everybody in position and being ready to go for an NFL-style scheme with Matt Patricia last season. Now, you know, he's working alongside a guy like Caleb Downs, who's one of the smartest football players to come out of the draft in a while. Like, I understand that he had other guys alongside him, but he called the signals at Ohio State. So I don't think throwing the green dot on Sonny Styles is too much for him to handle. But ultimately, I think the green dot decision comes down to who's going to be on the football field. And that's why I'd prefer Sonny Styles wear the green dot. I don't really care that he's giving or not giving the signals, but I want him to be on the football field because I think he unlocks this defense. I think he's the one that can do a little bit of everything at the linebacker position. If you ask him to cover, I feel fine. If you ask him to blitz, I feel fine. If you ask him to play the run, I feel fine. If you ask Leo Chenal to play the run, great. You ask him to cover? Eh. You ask Frankie Louvu to blitz? Great. You ask him to cover a pass? Eh. You know, like, Sonny can do everything. That's why he gets drafted number 7 overall. You don't get drafted that high if you're not a freak athlete and a really special off-ball linebacker. You don't get drafted there at that position at number 7 unless people really believe that you're going to be able to do something. So, for me, I think Sonny Styles, I'd like to see him end up being the green dot. And he's been kind of rotating through. It feels like of the linebackers running with the ones so far, it feels like a majority, maybe almost all of the reps with the ones has gone to Frankie. And then probably, I don't know, large majority, maybe 75-80% has still been Sonny. So I think he's going to be up there. But he's also rotated through. Chanel's played up there as well. But I'm very interested to see how they work that linebacker rotation as well. 800-636-1067, if you'd like to hop in. We'll get into some Nats discussion in just a bit, but more of your phone calls on the Commanders next as we continue to break down training camp. Welcome back. Overtime on the Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 3 o'clock. We'll get into some Nationals discussion in just a couple of moments, but final couple phone calls on the Commanders before we get into the trade deadline for the Nationals and a little bit of a losing streak popping up for the Nats. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to chime in on the Commanders. Same phone number if you'd like to chime in to talk about the Nationals in just a couple of moments. Again, 800-636-1067. Let's get out to E in Rockville. E, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Toby? It's good to hear you on the weekend talking about some Commanders football, getting juiced up. It's August.
Yes, sir.
Got some preseason games coming, although the Nats have disappointed the last 2 days. I want to talk about the schemes because, see, a lot of people tend to think it's a new scheme. Some guys are going to fit. Some guys are going to fit this, that, I'm afraid. I think it's actually a good thing. Not only do I think it fits with all the guys that they brought in, but the opposition of teams that they're playing, when we look at the schedule, go, oh, my gosh, this is a gauntlet of a schedule. You got the Eagles. You got the Cowboys. You got the Seattle Seahawks. You got the Indianapolis Colts. But we have to also think, neither of those teams, no matter how many games the Commanders have played against the Eagles, the Cowboys, know what's coming because they don't know this scheme. They don't know the plays. They don't know the language that Jaden and then even that defense is going to be screaming out loud. They don't know any of that. And it's best, I think, that you play the Eagles and Cowboys that fast because it's less tape on, you know, from you when you play those division foes. Yes, down the road, there's going to be more. They can pick up the language. Who knows? Maybe David Blau and Devontae Jones change up the language a little bit to continue to confuse you. But, you know, I think it's actually a positive because the opposition is the one that doesn't have the upper hand. I think the Commanders have the upper hand because these coordinators are going to put players in positions where they can succeed and where they know they can make plays, not where they're going to be forced. I feel like Cliff forced it. I feel like, you know, the previous DC also forced it. And we were also having to play a lot of, like, you know, pre-rent sometimes in the case where we were giving up 10, 15 yards. Now, there was a previous caller that, like maybe four callers ago, was talking about Jaden and not getting rid of the ball. That comes with comfortability. A lot of those wide receivers, we have to remember, by the time that he started to come around with Luke, Luke had okay games, Luke had bad games. Then you started playing with players off of the practice squad. I mean, come on, for real? You have to have rhythm with practice squad players, and if you're not practicing with them a lot on the first team like that, you're not going to feel comfortable getting rid of the ball. When you throw the ball to Terry and a cornerback has his head turned, you can throw that ball up and you knew Terry was going to go get it. You knew De'Ami Brown when he was here in 2024 was going to go get it. He didn't feel that same way with these players in 2025. So it was more of a comfortability to throw that ball and understand that that receiver or tight end is going to go get it than in 2024 when he could throw that ball up, like I said, to De'Ami and Terry and say, oh,
yeah,
those guys are going to go get it. I know I'm going to give them a chance. Thanks for taking my call. That's what I got to say.
Yeah, appreciate it, E. I think you can definitely look at it the way that he's talking about it, where you can say there's going to be an advantage for Washington going into some of these games because other teams don't know your schemes, and that is certainly true. When you take the field on September 13th at 4:25 at the Link in Philadelphia, Philly's going to have an idea of what you run, but not fully, because you've never seen it. When you take the field in Dallas on September 20th at 4:25, they'll have 1 week's worth of tape to tell definitively of what you've actually run in a game that matters. So it could play in their favor. I just also think that it could play against you and that you're still learning your scheme potentially. And I think they're going to try to iron out as many wrinkles as possible in training camp, but also it'll be the team's first time running it in a real game, right? So there is something to that as well. So I think you can kind of look at it either way, and it can be a positive thing where maybe it takes a couple of weeks to adjust. And if that's the case, that'd be great. That's what I'd prefer. I hope that is the thing that teams have to adjust to, and you feel like you got off in the right foot because of the fact that you've got two new schemes to get ready for. 800-636-1067. Let's get out to PJ in Reston. PJ, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Happy Saturday to you. So I'm on defense, right? What I'm really kind of like really happy about is the depth that we have with our pass rushers. So what I want to see them do, we don't have, I mean, not many teams have, you know, guys that are going to get you like 14, 18, whatever, 20, 23 sacks. But I don't know how many teams have four guys that can get you, like, realistically seven or more sacks. You know, we got Chase on, O'Day, Dorrance, I'm forgetting somebody, Luvu. And mm-hmm. then if Styles gets you some sacks too, right, then that makes so I want to see a lot of blitzing from that. I think we have the toolkit to do it. I'm going to be paying a lot of attention. Our front seven is very, very strong, right? I think our defense will be at least kind of like middle of the pack. But if we get anything like average or better play from our corners, because our safeties are pretty solid too, that could make us possibly a top 10 defense. But at the same time, if our corners are just terrible, that could be what you know, that's probably the biggest X factor on the whole team, you know, besides injuries, right? That could be just between going 7-10 to like, you know, 10-7 or 11-6. And then on offense, you know, I think we got some pretty solid talent overall, but I think that the lack of number two receiver, it's a little dicey. Hopefully Antonio Williams comes out good. So because of that, what I want to see them do is take a page out of when we had Austin Ekeler, right? We have a pretty good depth at running back, right? Hopefully Ja'Cory Croskett improves as a pass catcher. I want to see a lot of, especially in the first couple weeks of the season, a lot of passes to Rashad White and Ja'Cory Croskett. I think that's the best thing you can do to get a little bit of a easier situation for whoever the number two wide receiver is. So that's kind of what I'm looking at on both sides of the ball. Thank you, guys. Have a great afternoon.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call. And, yeah, so a couple of things. He mentions throwing the ball to guys out of the backfield. We've seen that a decent bit through a couple of days of practice. Some of that is just getting to the check down. Some of it, you know, maybe design stuff. But they have thrown it to guys out of the backfield. And I will say one thing that stood out today. Bill Kroski-Merritt made some beautiful catches out of the backfield. There was one where we were watching, just from my vantage point, I was down in a corner of the end zone area, and they were more so in the middle of the field, so I was trying to get an idea of who it was, but I literally asked the guy standing next to me. I'm like, who the heck was that that caught that ball? And he's like, it was Bill. It's like, really? Like, that was kind of the, like, I didn't expect Bill to be showing off hands like that. So hopefully that's something that he's really worked on this offseason, is able to carry it over. So that was nice to see. And another final observation I wanted to point out from watching practice today and watching this team over the first 3 days of practices, I love the way that this offense is going to create some easy stuff for the quarterback. I mean, just some simple stuff where the alignment of the formation creates a leverage, understanding the way that the defense likes to play these stacks and bunches, so that, all right, I'm going to create leverage where this guy is now going to be playing outside of where I'm aligned, and that guy's running an inbreaker. Well, naturally, you're going to have the advantage there, or vice versa. That's beautiful. That is how you scheme up an offense. That is how, if you are in the camp that says they're okay at wide receiver because David Blau and Jaden Daniels are going to make them right, that right there is where you got to be living. That right there is what you're talking about, where I worked this alignment, and now I've got my guy in an advantageous position to be open just because of the route that he's running. That is perfect. And I saw that a couple of times today, so I wanted to shout that out as well. You know, that's the kind of good stuff that you're hoping David Blau is able to make his hallmark as the offensive coordinator here in D.C. I got a tweet from somebody saying that, a little bit worried, KBWFT was saying, positive and negative with Blau is if he's a success, he's gone in no time. He said maybe it's a little cart before the horse, but more worried about losing a genius than anything else. Let me just see that he's a genius. I've liked what I've seen so far in terms of the design and everything. Still got to see some of the execution get a little bit better with the offense, but I can see the vision, so I like that sense. Got to see it actually get executed now, but maybe wait a little bit before we're like worried that he's gone, but I do understand why so many people like him. Listening to him talk during OTAs, you can tell why he's in the spot that he's in at the age that he's in. He's a bright individual. Now it's about just being able to execute and put everything together and show why he got this position at the age that he did, and with the lack of coaching experience that he did. I think they believe in him, and it's easy to see why. All right, let's get into the Washington Nationals. Man, the last couple of days have been tough. It's been tough to watch this team have chances with runners in scoring position and not be able to bring them home, and it's kind of cost them, and they've lost three in a row. Bad time to do that. Deadline coming up on Monday. They could sell off Foster Griffin. They could sell off Luis Garcia. They could sell off other names. Does it make them more likely to do it now that they've dipped below 500 and a couple of games out of the wild card spot? What do you want to see them do? 800-636-1067. Let's talk Nats. What are they going to do ahead of the trade deadline on Monday? Toby Altizer with you here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer with you. 800-636-1067 if you would like to chime in. Last couple of days have been rough for the Washington Nationals. It's been fun having the season kind of get kicked off for the Commanders, and so there's eternal optimism, excitement, and people are feeling really good about where the team's going to be. And it felt that way a little bit about the Nationals for about a couple of days ago, and now they've dropped three in a row. And man, if you don't start to feel a little bit of that frustration and some of the uncertainty start to kick back in, you know, it was so tough where they had a six-game homestand against Arizona and Toronto after they had won two series to start the second half of the season after the All-Star break. They win both those series on the road in Sacramento against the A's, against Colorado. You take the series at home against the Diamondbacks, the team that you were chasing for that wild card spot. So you felt really good going into that Toronto series. And there were just so many missed opportunities against the Jays. Just so many of them. You go back to game one on Monday. You got the bases loaded against Max Scherzer in the first inning with one out and not able to punch anything across. The Nationals lose that one by a run, 3-2. They won game two. You bounce back on Wednesday. More missed opportunities. Trey Savage was awesome in that one. So partially you just got beat by a really good starting pitcher. But that was a team that you wanted to take 2 of 3 against in Toronto, a team that was not playing all that well going into the series and hasn't been that good this season. To lose 2 of 3 at home to them, going into an 8-game stretch where you've got a 4-gamer against Atlanta and a 4-gamer against Philadelphia, two teams that are ahead of you and well ahead of you in Atlanta's case in the standings, that's tough. And through 2 games here against the Braves, the Nationals have missed opportunities and just not been able to come through when they needed it. I mean, game one of the series, the Nationals lose 5-4. Jake Irvin returned from the injured list, gave you 5 innings, gave up 5 earned runs, but it pitched a little bit better than that before giving up a couple of runs at the end of his outing there. But the stat that really sticks out, because you lost by a run even though Jake gave up 5, 0-for-9 with runners in scoring position. You got to be able to bring guys home. Situations where they had runners 2nd and 3rd with 1 out. Guys got to score. I don't really care how you do it. If you got a bunt to try to get the run home, if you got a sack fly out to the outfield, even sometimes a weak ground ball where they're conceding a run. Got to score. Got to find a way to punch one across. They couldn't do it in the game on Thursday night. And then last night, more of the same. Now this one, they didn't lose by a single run, so maybe it wasn't as big of a deal. Maybe one of those hits doesn't change the outcome of the game necessarily. But 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position, 11 runners left on base. They've been a league average team, just looking at their batting average with runners in scoring position. They're right in the middle of the pack this season, which is interesting for a team that is the first one to get to 600 runs, is the number one offense in Major League Baseball by 30 runs currently. They have 602. The Pirates have 572. So the Nats are well ahead of anybody else in the run score department. 36 ahead of the Dodgers, almost 40 ahead of the Chicago Cubs, 38 ahead of them. And then you're getting down to 50 runs ahead of the Milwaukee Brewers, one of the best teams in baseball. So when you look at what this offense has been able to accomplish, there's no question that they're one of the best, if not the best, in Major League Baseball. The problem is, they haven't necessarily been the most clutch at times. And unfortunately for the Nationals, they could have used one of those hits in those situations in game one or two of this series against the Braves, and they weren't able to come up with it. Just taking a quick look at the wild card standings currently for the Nats as they get ready for Monday's trade deadline, just 2 more games before the decision has to be made. They'll play Monday night in Philadelphia, 6:40 first pitch, and they'll have to have made the decision on what they're doing at the deadline because it'll pass at 6 o'clock on Monday evening. But the Nationals currently 55-56, and they're right there still, 2.5 games back of a wild card spot. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Grant brought this point up, and I think it's really astute. We've just been talking about that final wild card spot as the only spot that they could get, and realistically, they could pass either the Diamondbacks or the Phillies to get into either the 2nd or 3rd wild card spot. The Diamondbacks are just a game up on the Phillies for that 2nd wild card spot, which would make them only 3.5 games ahead of the Nationals, 2.5 back of the Phillies. So if you just look at the teams and all the conglomeration of teams that could fight for the wild card in the National League, Arizona's holding the 2nd wild card spot. Chicago's, the Cubs have the 1st wild card spot. They're 5 games up on the Phillies for the final wild card spot, 4 up on the Diamondbacks. I think they're pretty set that they're going to end up in that 1st wild card spot. But after that, the Diamondbacks lead the Phillies by a game in the 2nd wild card spot. Phillies hold the 3rd wild card spot. And then it's game back, Padres. Game and a half back, Marlins. 2.5 back, Pirates and Nationals. 3 back, Cardinals. And I guess you can throw the Reds in, even though they're 5 games under 500, so I don't really consider them a part of it. But they're only 4.5 back. So that's the crazy part. There are plenty of teams that are in this thing. And that's where the decision for Paul Toboni has to factor in here. This team, because of their pitching this season, has not really been able to rattle off much of a win streak. They have won series at a really high clip, but the reality when you win a three-game series, if you do that over the course of 162 and you win every series, you're going to end up in a really good spot, obviously. But if you're trying to make up ground or pass teams in the standings and do those sorts of things, if you're only winning two out of every three games, you're only picking up a game, two games a week. Like, that's pretty tough because you could have something where the Marlins, they went on a heater in the month of June. Now, in July, they went on a 12-game losing streak and proceeded to drop back well below 500. But if you're only slowly taking steps forward every time, just winning a series, winning a series, winning a series, don't get me wrong, I'll sign up for it. But this Nationals team hasn't been able to rattle off, hey, they won seven in a row. Hey, they've won five in a row. They haven't really been able to rattle that off. And I think that would really have changed their fortunes if at any moment this season they could have done that. It's more so short winning spurts of either two or three games, and then you just hope that when you lose the next game, it doesn't turn into a two or three or four game losing streak. And unfortunately for the Nationals, they've now dropped three in a row to fall one game back. All right, final hour comes up next, and let's dive deep into this. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to chime in. What should the Nationals do? What will the Nationals do at Monday's trade deadline? Foster Griffin, Luis Garcia, CJ Abrams, anyone else on the roster? What should the Nats do, and what do you think they're going to do? 800-636-1067. The phone lines are open for you Nats fans. What do you want to see them do? Trade deadline comes up in 2 days. Two more games until then. How realistic is it that they could buy, sell? What do you think? Again, 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer with you here on The Fan.